Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
I got another one for you, Key. If it's so easy to get open, why do so many guys in the NFL not get open? You need to go out there. And you never mind coming back as a player. You need to go back out there as a coach if it's that easy to get guys open on the field.
Well, it's all by design, too, now. I mean, you know, and what I mean by design, if I took Cooper Kupp and put Cooper Kupp on the outside on the numbers, he's going to struggle to get open. That's just the reality of it. He's perfect for the position that he plays inside. Perfect, but if I put him on that grown man island, that's different out there. So it's all by design. It's not that the guys can't get open. Coaches sometimes don't understand what players can do. You know, they pigeonhole guys. They say, well, he's a slot guy. He can only do this, or he's a that guy. So they take him and they insert him in that spot, and they never give him an opportunity to expand beyond what their beliefs are of that particular player when they get him. And they don't want to coach him up to do it. So that's kind of a lot of the times what happens, you know, or they put a guy in a position that he can't do. It's like, well, man, that dude can't play outside. Y'all got him out there. He can't like take Cooper. I mentioned Cooper Kupp because Cooper Kupp is a L.A. guy, and I wanted to bring some Rams into this. But if you look at Julian Edelman is a good football player for what he does. But if you asked him to play on the outside numbers a majority of the snaps, forget about it. I mean, they swallow him whole. I mean, but that's okay. You got to know where your lane is at. You know, it's in basketball. If you ask a guy to shoot jumpers all day long and he's a perimeter big down low, and you ask him to shoot J's and he missing them, you can't get mad at him for that. That's not what he does.
All right, so the NBA is trying to figure out how they're going to come back. They're trying to figure out what format is going to come back. The original idea of 30 teams, everybody coming back, was met with not a great deal of enthusiasm because there's a bunch of teams whose season is, for all intents and purposes, over. So it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. We had a 1-16 where you throw the conferences out the window. That may not go. Now we're talking about a play-in tournament, kind of a soccer-style group stage that the NBA is toying with. Here's Ramona talking about the idea and whether or not teams think it is a good idea.
Pretty much anyone I talk to in the league doesn't really like this idea of the play-in tournament because it's pretty unfair to the 7 and 8 seeds right now. Why should a team that was 3 or 4 games back get a realistic chance of passing them in the standings and taking their playoff spot just because we can't finish out the regular season all the way? It doesn't feel right for Dallas to give Portland or New Orleans or whoever you want is, or Sacramento, a chance to make up 3.5-4 games in the standings when they probably wouldn't have been able to do it with the remaining 17 games in the schedule, right? Why is that fair?
The why is because the schedule is not balanced, because they have not played the same teams the same amount of times. And we all know that who you play is often more important than how you're playing. That's the why. If I'm Portland and I got the easiest schedule left and Memphis has the hardest schedule left and I'm only 3 games back, I'm thinking, hell yes, I can catch them. That's the why.
Well, see, Ramona sounds like me. And I understand what you're saying, but Ramona sounds like more like me in terms of, it's too late, man. Like, I understand, I get it, but because of the pandemic, it's a little bit too late to start inserting team into this because they would have been there if it was included and their schedule is easy. So we might as well just shoehorn them in. I don't like that idea.
Well, we're not shoehorning them in because they still have to actually win when the tournament plays. It just presents them an opportunity to get in. So just because you're allowed to be in a tournament doesn't mean you're automatically going to take someone's space. It just finds a way to kind of wrap up the remaining 15 to 20 games that a team may have left and condense it down to a tournament-style play to shake out a winner. I don't personally think it's fair either, but I understand why you would want to do that, because if you still got maybe, 20% of the season left to play or whatever it is, that could be a huge difference, because just like Portland and New Orleans were derailed by injuries early in the season, those teams that are locked into the postseason now very well could have been derailed by injuries later in the season as well. That element is taken out by end of the season without completing the remaining 20% of the games that are left. But well, as I said earlier, there are all kinds of unfortunate things that are going to happen. People aren't going to be able to hit certain numbers that are going to allow them to make more money depending upon how that contract's worded. Your place in history might either be slowed or even totally derailed. What if LeBron James is 43 years old and finishes 27 points shy of passing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the all-time scoring list? And we can look back at this moment in time and say, this is why it happened. So there's all kinds of things that are going to be unfortunate as we try to find a way to get our feet rolling again. Doing what they're doing in terms of floating this idea of a tournament, I understand why. I don't think they should do it, but if they did do it, I at least respect the rationale for it.
They're going to float a lot of things out there. In the end, I believe strongly that they're going to come back to the normal situation. And if anything, they end the season and roll right into the playoffs, 8-8, East versus East, West versus West. And I think that that's how it's going to wind up being.
Look, any basketball is fine by me. Whether it's a traditional format or something different, that's fine. I'm happy to do anything to get guys back on the court. That being said, I think they would be making a huge mistake if they did not use this as an opportunity to try some stuff. Because think about it. We always hear these ideas. Let's use baseball as an example really quickly. Baseball for years would love to add the designated hitter to the National League. But for a variety of different reasons, it's really difficult to get through. It's really difficult to get through the players union. It's really difficult to do all these different things. But with this particular scenario, they could say, look, we have no other choice. We have to do this. We can't put taxes on this. We can't make sure that the pitching is that. We need to alter these formats. Let's see if we can stumble into something that works really well. The idea of a play-in tournament for those last couple of spots has been bandied about for years. There's been bandied about, let's not just say, okay, 1-8, let's go. Let's say 1-8, you guys get this, and then maybe 8-10, you guys are going to have to fight for that last spot. There can be draft picks involved in it. There can be playoff seeding involved in it. There could be gate that comes along with playing in playoff games. That those are things that we're probably not going to ever get through without all sorts of crazy fights along the way. Let's use this opportunity to try some stuff. Use it as a little bit of a lab because we're still going to get the same four teams. We're still going to get the Lakers and the Clippers and the Bucks and the Celtics, or at least probably 2 or 3 of those teams in the finals. We're going to get the same result. Let's mess around with it a little bit and see if we can come up with something that may be a little better.
But here's the question, Travis. Off the top of your head, what is your biggest issue with the current construction of the NBA specifically playoff structure?
You're just talking about the traditional 1-8 and that format?
I understand experiments with different things, but when you think about the way that the NBA playoff is structured as it currently stands, what is your biggest issue with it? And why do you think the NBA needs to change it?
Well, there's two things. Number one, I think if you had an opportunity to get some of those teams that are just outside the number, if you're talking about teams 9-10, teams 7-8, those teams are not going to win the NBA championship. But if there could be some monetary incentive for those guys to compete to get a round of playoffs in their building, I think that would make it far more interesting during the regular season for teams to compete near the top of their division as opposed to laying down and tanking and trying to get that number one seed, because we don't know how that's going to go. That's part of it. And then the second part, LZ, is I don't have a major fundamental problem with 1-8. It's not like I look at it and go, oh, this sucks, or this is broken, or this is what it is. My issue would be maybe there's something better that we don't even know is out there right now, and this is an opportunity to kind of go explore and see what that might be. I don't like it what it is. Let's take a chance. This is a perfect opportunity to take that chance.
And there's two things to take the chance on. Oh, well, one for me, 1-16. 1-16. Take that, do that. I like that idea. All the other stuff, they can miss me with that. Either you do it the old-fashioned way, the traditional way, 8-8, East and West, or you do 1-16.
So who's the Western Conference champion under a 1-16 structure?
Who would be the Lakers, Western, right? It would be the Lakers, the best record.
So you will award the conference championship based upon how
but let me ask you guys this. Does that
Yeah, but I'm then not, the conference championship. The conference yeah, I was about to say the conference championship ain't really going to matter. It's
Lakers
like,
don't hang that banner. They don't care.
Yeah,
they
doesn't really matter. You can make them just like college sports. You make them the number one seed. They're the number one team in the NBA.
and whoever has the second best record is the second best in their whatever. If they come out of the East, they come out of the East. If the second best record comes out of the West, then the third team is out of the East. They're the Eastern Conference champion. If you want to crown an Eastern and a Western Conference champion, that Eastern Conference champion might be the fifth seed because everybody in the West got better records. Fine with me. I don't care. 1-16 or 8-8, either or.
Would you like to see the same thing done then in the NFL? Forget AFC champions. After the end of the season, 1-16 play or whatever the number is.
I would like to see them not reward teams with losing records a home field playoff game. That's for damn sure.
I agree with that. I've been preaching that for well over a decade.
Totally that doesn't happen very often. I know that it happens occasionally, but off the top of I can think of two times.
Well, not even necessarily a losing record, a record less than their opponent that they facing at home during the playoffs.
One of the things that hockey gets right, and I think that the NBA and really the NFL does this too after the first weekend, is that you reseed based on who's left. That if you go through the regular season and you're the number one seed and all of a sudden you find yourself, you get this really weird draw because something happened lower in the bracket. I think that the way you should do it is let's play the first round 1-8 or 1-16, whatever it is, play those matchups. And then when it's done, okay, who's left? Now the highest ranking seed plays the lowest ranking seed. That's how they do it in a variety of other sports. This idea that, okay, here's the bracket and we're just going to play it to its conclusion. The teams that went through an 82 game season or 162 game season or a 16 game season should be rewarded for putting in the best work over the course of the regular season and not be subject to a weird draw because the brackets were already laid out like that. I think that would be a good tweak. Always reseed based on record.
I like the idea of reseeding based upon your regular season record. I also like the idea of not rewarding teams for being in weak divisions. So if you're in a bad division and you were able to win with an 8-8 record, that's all fine and dandy. You get to be the division champ in the NFL. But what you don't get to do is take the spot of a 9-7 team in the playoffs. I don't want to see teams with better records than a division.
Yeah, but there's a problem there, though. You'd have to change the schedule because if I win my division and I played 6 of my 16 games in the division, then we have to just throw the divisions out the window because I'm playing against these teams to beat these teams. A lot of times these rosters are constructed to win your division. I hear what you're saying, that I can be this, but this team has a better record, but I don't go. Then we have to throw the divisions away if we're going to do that.
No, you keep it your division. You get to be the division champion. It's just your division wasn't good enough to have a representative in the NBA playoffs, just like in college. You could certainly win your conference, but that doesn't mean you get to be in the college playoffs.
Yeah, because it's just not enough spots. But if I'm playing, if the schedule is predicated on being in your division, every team in that league plays more teams against their division opponents than they do outside of it, then the division can't be meaningless. Otherwise, you just got to go to a balanced schedule. 16 games, and we're all going to play 16 games. I'm going to play 8 against these guys, 8 against that guy, 8 from the NFC, 8 from the AFC, and no divisions at all. I'm fine with your plan, but I don't know why. Like, the NBA basically said, forget divisions, right? Just forget divisions. We're not even going to do it anymore. That we're just going to do it by conference. And whether you win the division or not, you don't get an automatic spot. It's just the 8 best records. I'm okay with that, but we just have to kick the divisions out to begin with.
By the way, I do hear Raj ringing the bell because he knows that's how Dallas has been getting in the playoffs so many times because they've been able to sneak in as division winners and not having the best record. Don't be angry. I hear you ding, ding, dinging for that reason.
Well, look, we've all got vested interests in different things. Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA insider, is going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on what he thinks the format might be when the NBA returns. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, lots of potential formats up in the air for the return of the NBA. Joining us right now to talk about all of them is ESPN NBA insider Bobby Marks joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Bobby, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good, man. We just trying to figure out what this madness is in the NBA with all the different formats that's somewhat floated out there and being put on the table for them to make a decision on. Two of my favorites, obviously, is the traditional way, 8-8, East and West, or the 1-16 bracket, because I just feel like when you do that, it's 16 teams. You know what it is. Teams that didn't have an opportunity to finish the season that was right on the edge of making the playoffs, oh well. Whether it was injury or bad play, big deal. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm more of a proponent for the 16 teams as far as where it ended in mid-March, either if we're going to keep East and West or if we go to the receding part of it. I think this is the opportunity to do so because you won't have any travel related issues as far as, you know, an East Coast team playing a West Coast team. You're all kind of under one roof. I think it helps that, you know, you're not taking 30 teams, you're not taking 24 teams, you're not even taking 20 teams. I think less is better. I think there's so much unknown as far as what is going to happen in the next couple months. I think it just mitigates against potential risk. The spreading if somebody catches it. I am more in that. I'm in the camp of simplifying it. Take 16 teams, get to Orlando, use 3 or 4 games as exhibition if we're going to go maybe East versus West teams, and kind of just go from there.
Bobby, I'm curious, have there been any conversations that you're aware of in regards to how the NBA plans on approaching the rosters of the teams, regardless of the structure going forward? In other words, would a team like the Brooklyn Nets be allowed to bring back KD and Kyrie because of the extended delays as a result of the pandemic? Or will there be a freeze on the construction of your roster?
No, you'll be able to, you know, as far as what you, you know, end of the season with, if it's 14 or 15 players, because, your playoff rosters are, it's fluid. You know, if Kevin Durant's healthy or Kyrie Irving's healthy, that they'll be able to, you know, use those players, although they were, you know, injured in mid-March there. So I think the one question that that teams are looking at is, are two-way players going to be allowed to play eligible just because it gives you two extra bodies? Is there going to be any type of roster expansion that protects you in case you do lose three guys in the playoffs there? And is there a kind of a grace period? If there is no abbreviated regular season, is there a grace period from the time, I guess, training camp starts to when the playoffs start? Because you won't have that flexibility to sign a player or waive a player. I think those are the issues that are going to be, have to be fleshed out. But yeah, I mean, if Kevin Durant's healthy, if they deem him healthy and he's going to play, then there's no restriction as far as him playing in late July or early August.
Bobby Marks joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Bobby, I know that there's a meeting of the Board of Governors that's coming up soon. When do these decisions need to be made? What's the timeline as far as, okay, this is going to be the format, this is where we're going to do it, and let's get this ball rolling? Is there a drop-dead date that these decisions have to be made by, or can you continue to say, okay, we're going to wait for more information, we're going to wait and see what the players do, or is there a date that it has to be done by?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about a drop dead date, but you know, the calculation for to get 4 rounds of playoffs in 7 game series. yeah, I know there's certainly factored in travel in the past years. Is I think 55 days. You know, it's 2 months. Maybe we can shorten that. So, I mean, if you're looking to start this thing at the end of July, I mean, that's taking you right up until the end of September. So, you know, then you have to factor in free agency. What happens if you're a team like the Lakers and you win a championship at the end of September, and then we've got to start training camp in early December? So I don't think there's a drop-dead date, but I think the clock is ticking as far as to kind of get some type of resolution. And that's why I don't see – I know it's still being talked about. I don't see a way how 30 teams are going to get to Orlando and we're going to play 5 or 7 games, and then we're going to start the playoffs here. Even if we do some type of full play and each team has to play 8 games and then we go to the Elite 8 and it goes from there. I mean, it takes a long time. And then it's also like, what are we doing with the games? Like, you know, are we playing at noon, 3, 7, 10? Like, are we going to play back-to-back game playoff games here, go back to the old days here? So I think there's, as I said, a lot to get flushed out here. I don't think there's a drop-dead date, but as you can look at the calendar, I don't think the league in any way wants to be playing into October here.
Oh, Bobby,
when you look at it, though, when you look at it, Bobby, and you have to factor in all of those things that you just talked about, free agency, that you still you still got all
that. I think we're losing Key here a little bit, guys. Key's kind of dropping out here. Bobby, go ahead, LZ.
Well, Bobby, I was going to ask you about NBA player salaries. We've seen a lot of conversations regarding baseball and the players' union. How does the NBA players' union handle a conversation about how the players are going to be compensated once play gets started again?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, players have already been getting a 25% reduction already. There's language that was agreed upon that could potentially increase to 40% based on what games are missed. I think whatever format is agreed upon is going to go hand in hand as far as what type of player reduction. I understand whatever canceled games are, it's, you know, 1% of each guy's pay per game here. I think probably the easiest thing, if you're the league and the player association, is probably to agree upon a cap number. If that's, you know, 10 games missed or 8 games missed, I think you have to even it out amongst all 30 teams, even if a team like Golden State is not participating in the playoffs or some type of pool play here. So, yeah, I think you can do it where there's enough reduction money and enough escrow money to offset some of the losses that you're going to incur right now. But that will go hand in hand as far as whatever format both sides agree upon.
Bobby, what I wanted to ask you before my comrades went south on me, when you look at everything that's factored in, the draft, free agency, the combine, all of these sort of things, and the playoffs running into September, potentially, what do you think about starting the season, the new season in 2021, Christmas Day? That way you're not up against the other sports. You're rolling into your springtime stuff. What do you think about that?
I agree. I don't think we're going to have a choice. I think Christmas Day is going to be, or maybe right before that, is based on how things are going to play out here. You know, end of December is more of a strong likely scenario, and we're just based on how the schedule is going to go. I mean, there are so many things that have to be, besides the return to play, but collectively bargained, the economics of the cap, as you mentioned, the draft, some type of combine, when the free agency start, player options. I mean, I have a list of like 100 things that have to be figured out here, and everything kind of filters in around as far as the NBA, and we say instead of July 1, October 1st now starts the cap calendar year, and we're going to start training camp in early December, and then Christmas Day kind of kicks things off. I think that's probably the most logical way to go about doing it. And then it comes down to, now, is that going to be a continual pattern for 21-22 and all in future years going forward, that we're playing the playoffs in August or maybe even in July?
Bobby Marks is joining us here on the morning show. Bobby, we've heard some former players say that whatever happens once the league gets going again, that there's going to be an asterisk on the championship. Where do you come out on that? Is this going to be just an NBA championship that we remember like all the others, or will it be looked at differently historically?
I'm not into the asterisk. I know we mentioned the 99 season when San Antonio won and it was a 50-game season. I get it. I think it might look a little bit differently if we get to a championship game and, you know, Giannis and LeBron all of a sudden test positive, right? I mean, like, then we're probably looking at it in a different light here. So I think, the league is going to, you know, not cheat the system. That means, not playing best of three series and just trying to, or a 30-game single elimination. I think that maybe comes with an asterisk here. I think there'll be enough games played to filter it out, to figure out who the best team is going to be. I understand we can say home court, if you're the Lakers or Milwaukee, that would have played into it. But everyone is going to be kind of dealing with the same situation here.
Bobby, I'm curious. We were having a debate about changes that we would like to see happen that have remained permanent on the other side. Out of all the conversations you've heard regarding the NBA, what's the one thing that you would like to see the NBA adopt going forward post this pandemic break?
I want to see the draft come after free agency. I think that's when you talk to teams, that's more of a growing consensus. Instead of having, in normal years, you have the draft the end of June, then free agency starts July 1. I think if you talk to teams now, they would like to start free agency, kind of have an idea of what your roster is going to look like, similar to what the NFL does, and then have the draft either a week or 2 weeks late after that. I think that's probably the one thing that I would want to see.
Bobby Marks covers the NBA for ESPN. Bobby, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That he brings up a good point. I've never understood why the order is what the order is. Why wouldn't you want free agency after the draft? That seems to make a lot more sense to me.
Well, I think
I don't know.
At least right now, that's the way the NBA is constructed. You know, they kind of manipulate the draft picks to help entice teams to make things easier for them to get free agents. But I think, you know, like Bobby and like you, Travis, it makes a lot more sense once you know what's in your cupboard, what you need to go out and get.
Right. Exactly right. All right. The Rams in Vegas are expected to win 8.5 games, and a whole bunch of people are not buying it. Are they right? That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Look, yeah. I think we've all been pretty well established as we're not exotic pet owners, but the guys that keep the snakes, that's a whole different deal. If you're a snake guy, just stay on your side of the building, man. I do not need to hang out with you.
We have a
snake. No, I don't mess with snakes, exotic pets, none of those sort. Anything like that, I'm good. That's
but with the crocodile that you pet, you wouldn't go to your
well. That's different. They're there with trainers. I'm talking about me owning, not me touching. Me seeing I had a snake around my neck, but the guy that trained was right there. I don't want to own, and nor do I want to train. But you know what's so interesting to me, Travis and LZ, and Travis is from LA, and Raj is too, and as well as you and Jorge and all the rest of the gang. But I'm sitting here and I'm watching.
Hey, what's up, Hong?
I'm watching television. I'm watching the news, and you know I can't help but to go back to the Rodney King situation and the riots. And I'm watching this stuff on TV, these protests that's going on. And it's something that we hadn't mentioned all morning long. But as I continue to keep watching this, it's a little disturbing that we're in this same situation that we was in way back then and just dealing with it. Freeway, 101 freeway close to downtown LA yesterday, completely shut down. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. I just hope that we don't get to the riots that we had during the King situation or the Watts riots in the 60s. I just hope that we don't get to that point here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, it's seeing what we saw. It's really, really scary. I mean, I don't know what to say about it other than it's incredibly sad and disappointing and scary. And you're right, Key. I mean, it feels like it's building to something. Hopefully it's nothing like that. But yeah, you're right.
I'm not going to speak on it. I'm going to.
Well, no, you don't have to. I'm not asking you to speak on it like that. I'm just looking at it.
And normally this is my lane, but I'm just going to chill on it.
Well, it's just I'm just watching, and I'm like, I just hope that we don't get to this point where it, you know, other athletes, LeBron James and Kaepernick and J.J. Watt and some notable guys that are out there are speaking up on everything that's been taking place. We cannot ignore it. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like it didn't exist. I'm not going to turn it into a 4-hour talk show on our show, but at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and ignore it and act like it didn't exist when I'm sure there's other people out there in the world that is discussing it. Much like I said, it's on the news. It's in front of my eyes. I'm not going to turn the television just because it came on.
You know, you mentioned that LeBron tweeted about it, and I'm sure you guys saw his tweet as well. He was just named the best player in the NBA, number one on First Take's primetime players. He probably wasn't going to win the MVP. It feels like Giannis was going to grab that from him, but it still seems that everybody considers LeBron James the best player in the league. Maybe not the MVP this year, but still the best player in the entire league, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with you too much about it.
No, you. I mean, the Giannis factor is cute, but Giannis ain't 30, whatever, 5 years old or whatever LeBron is, and hadn't played as many years and still playing at a high level, a ridiculously high level. Giannis isn't there. So when you factor in all of that with his play, he's the best player. I mean, he's the best player.
I never cared about the narrative about how old he is in the conversation of MVP or best player. I think that's a ridiculous thing to do. It's ridiculous on both levels. It's ridiculous because when you do that, that tends to eliminate the young guys and it eliminates the old guys or elevates the old guys higher than where they need to be. So I hate talking about, oh, they can't believe they're doing that at this age. No, they're doing it. You know, I don't want to sit here and talk about, oh my God, I can't believe Serena Williams is still in these finals at this age. No, it's Serena Williams is in the finals. Like, take the age thing out of it, because there were certainly multiple seasons that I can think of where a guy like, say, like a Tim Duncan comes in, automatically elevates the San Antonio Spurs, but because he's a rookie, we can't vote for him for MVP. That's BS. He was MVP. He parachutes in. They go from being the number one overall pick to being one of the top teams in the league because he showed up. That's the MVP to me. But he doesn't get the votes because he's too young. And with LeBron, he doesn't need sympathy. He doesn't need us to remind you that he's 35 and he's still doing it. No. If a guy giving you 26, 8, and 11 and it has the best team in the Western Conference, which many people still think is the best conference in the NBA, regardless of age, that dude should be MVP.
No,
The difference is regardless of age. When it's a young guy or an old guy, I do think it's more impressive. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be eligible or considered for those awards, but we just don't see MVPs that are 17 years into their NBA career. It just doesn't happen very often. I'm not saying it's not worth it. I'm not saying that he hasn't earned it. The question is just that it becomes even more remarkable because it's just so unprecedented. We just don't see guys at this guy 17 years into the league win an MVP. Sure it is. You got a long list of those guys.
Well, I mean, Karl Malone won
at 17 years into his career.
He was older. He's still the oldest to ever win MVP.
Okay, there's one, but my point is this doesn't happen very often.
Jordan was before him. He was old.
That's 20 years ago, LZ. It's been a long time. It doesn't happen very often. These are guys that we're talking about haven't been in the league for two decades. It doesn't happen very often. I think it does. I agree with you that his age shouldn't give him an added bonus, but I do think that it makes it even more remarkable that he is in this conversation. That might, from the moment that LeBron James has stepped in this league, he has never been out of this conversation. That's what's extraordinary. Over 17 seasons, he's never been outside of that conversation. Not for 1 year, really? It's stupid.
No, it's one of those deals where it's just he's unbelievably a talented guy. I mean, his work ethic, everything that he's trained his body to be. He spends money every single year, countless millions of dollars, to put himself in a position to be the top guy going. And a lot of times, you know, it's one of those deals where people just get sick and tired of voting for the same guy over and over and over again. And this is the only opportunity that you have to really hate on him. So you're going to hate as much as you can. It's good to see him voted number one overall. That's a good thing.
No, I mean, this is my point. It's like he belongs there.
Of course he does.
Not because he's still doing it, but just because he's doing it. And that's my whole thing. I hate, because it sounds like charity to me. And that's just the way that I've interpreted it. Because people are quick to say, and he's 35. And it sounds like they got to give him something extra that has nothing to do with what he's actually doing on the floor. No, I don't.
Well, you're giving him that back. You're giving him that extra back because you're giving it back to him because it's being taken away from him. By saying that he's too old and he's going to break down eventually, people take that from you, so you try to give it back.
I don't mind bringing that up in the conversation of GOAT and being the greatest of all time, but when it comes to in a silo just this season, you just show the numbers, show what his team's doing, and bam, is he the MVP or not? I say yes, he is.
That's a little bit of a different question, because all those other things that you mentioned, LZ, get factored into that. Maybe they shouldn't, but they absolutely do. All right, 8.5 is the number. Key has them under. Do we have them over? That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Are you making waffles, Key?
That's my door.
Number 5 is up.
What do you got going there? That's not a square. That's not round. What is that?
That's my daughter, Nim. my daughter in making waffles. She made waffles and stuff.
You only got
she
no
makes
plates?
Breakfast every. Man, she put the thing on the napkin, fool.
Why is that? Is that I'm a like, heart shape? I'm trying to figure out what you're going for there.
Yeah, that's her deal. I don't know. It's her deal. She's a chef. She's a cook.
We'll put her on the phone. We need to find out what she's going.
Man, that's cute, man. Leave him alone, man.
Yeah, you hate
the rest of the crew. It sounds like you got a 7-man kitchen crew back there. Put them on.
7-man kitchen crew. I've told them to calm down with the slamming and bamming.
No, it's all
it's
good.
It's noise cancellation. This isn't like
it's making me hungry.
The same. As a Comrex, because we're doing it from the field tap, so it's a little bit different.
That looks like some fresh squeezed orange juice, too, with a little green straw.
I just want to stop.
She knows
real
what
quick.
She's doing.
I want to stop real quick and mention that Key just got the technical terms exactly right. I'm very impressed, Key.
Yes, he did.
You just dropped all of that knowledge without pausing. I'm very impressed.
What you think I don't think? You're the typical dude that I like to send to the left.
Humble.
What? Make people think that it's one thing when it's another. You're the typical guy.
Key, I've seen you try to operate your phone.
That I don't understand technology. Don't let people tell
it's
you
not people.
I sell them on that. Don't fall into that trap.
I have
don't
seen you. I have spent time with you.
I know what Hulu is. I know what all Netflix is. I know how to do all that.
That okay. You just went field tap right out of the gate is pretty impressive. I'm not going to lie.
Well, I mean, what do you think? You think I've been doing this for this long for nothing?
No, I just know that you got on that app yesterday, and now you're dropping it like you've been using it for 6 months. I'm impressed.
Well, I didn't want to use the app. I wanted to actually use the actual box, but because ESPN LA and Morales and Amanda gave me a rigged box, it kind of went south on me in the end yesterday, so I had to eventually get on the app like the rest of you guys.
He's going to be giving us technical advice before too long. All right, so 8.5 is the number. Nearly 3/4 of the money that has come in on Vegas on the Rams and their 8.5 win total has come in on the under. This is a team that won 9 games last year. Of their 7 losses, only a couple of them were pretty ugly. The other ones were very competitive, and yet the vast majority of people that are placing these bets, Key, agree with you that they think they're going to come in under 8.5 wins.
Well, and it sounds like people don't know what they're talking about. It sounds like, hey, all you really got to do is just look at the makeup of the team right now versus the team 2 years ago. There was a lot that was lost and not a whole lot that was gained. When you look at guys that have left and departed from their Super Bowl their Super Bowl appearance, it's in their NFC Championship win. There's a number of guys that's not around. In one particular, the offensive line struggled at bits last year.
Saffold.
Saffold was not on that team last year. That right side of that offensive line struggled. When you look at them coming back again this year, you say, okay, they may get a little bit better because it's a year removed from a year ago. But at the same time, we don't necessarily know in the preseason. You don't have Brandon Cooks, who was a leader in the passing game on a vertical stretch game, who cleared a lot of things out for Jared Goff and guys underneath. Todd Gurley played a significant role in helping them get to the Super Bowl down the stretch. Then you look at defensively in the secondary. You had guys at Tlaib and Peters. You also had Johnson at the safety spot. I mean, it's just so many guys that are gone. The defensive coordinator, Wade Phillips, is no longer there. The running back coach and Skip Pete is no longer there. Bone Fossils is no longer there. Greg the Leg is no longer there. I mean, so when you start to think about those sort of things and all the different changes, it's not out of the realm to think that they're only going to be an 8-8 type team.
Listen, I think it's all fine and dandy when you look at it on paper. At the end of the day, it truly is about, and we all know this, It's about what happens when you get on the field. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Rams fan. I'm saying that because we've seen it happen in the opposite direction a lot, where a team on paper is loaded with a whole lot of talent and there's a lot of expectations. And I'm looking at you, Cleveland Browns. But then they can't seem to get it together once they're on the field.
We've seen but if I took that same Cleveland Brown team and I dropped Sean McVay in there, I would feel good about the Cleveland Browns. If I took Sean McVay from last year's Cleveland Brown team and I dropped him in Cleveland instead of Freddie Kitchens, oh, I'm good. I know they're going to be all right.
And if I had two white parents, I could be white, as you like to say.
Well, you ain't got two white parents, and we're going to leave that alone.
All you have is what you have. So I'm looking and I'm going, I get it. I can see how you on paper will see a talent drain and think, huh, they may not be very good. But we've seen too many times in every sport possible where a very talented team on paper underachieves, and we've seen the opposite, where a team we didn't expect anything from, Memphis Grizzlies, for example, and you look up and they're playoff bound. So I'm not willing yet to write off the Rams based solely upon the fact that they've lost the names that we're accustomed to.
No,
them off, just saying that they're probably on the they're on the outside of the playoffs. Nobody's writing them off. They're going to eventually, if the talent continues to gel, they eventually might turn out to be a solid football team in a crowded division. But at the same time, they're not a Super Bowl contending team by no stretch of the imagination.
It doesn't feel like they are at this point. But look, we've watched football for a long time. You can feel these things building and you can feel these things starting to fade. And right now the Rams are not in the build stage. The build stage was a couple of years ago when Sean McVay showed up and all of a sudden it's like, wow, they're really good. They won 11 games. They won the division. The Falcons clipped them. But you knew coming back that they were going to be a better team than they were the year before. And they were. They go to the Super Bowl. This last season, they took a step backwards. They were the NFC champs to a team that missed the playoffs. Now, there were extenuating circumstances, Todd Gurley's health or whatever the relationship was with Todd Gurley and the team. He didn't get the ball the way that he used to. We saw, like you mentioned, Key, Roger Saffold was gone. Some other guys had gone along the way. They got a little older. But the transition that they're in right now does not feel like a transition where they're about to take that leap forward. The question I have is it doesn't feel like they're getting ready to move a whole way back either. And at 9 last year, that's the over. This team feels very similar to what they were a year ago. I don't know if they've gotten exponentially better, but I didn't feel like they've gotten a lot worse either. It feels like they're right about where they were, which is the over of this number, which is why I think it's weird that nearly 3 out of 4 people are choosing for them to go under. This is a very similar team.
No, because 9 wins a year ago with Todd Gurley.
Yeah, but Todd Gurley didn't do much.
In and out of the lineup. No, I understand that. Just calm down, the little fella. Todd Gurley in and out of the lineup. Okay. Whitworth, a year older, still look great, probably still can play. A little bit older. No Brandon Cooks in and out of the lineup, concussion protocol. All of those sort of guys. Clay Matthews Jr. had a handful of sacks, no longer there. That production's gone. Eric Weddle's gone. Who else am I missing from that offense? Oh, Greg the Leg is gone. The coaching staff is reshaped on the defensive side of the ball, which was a main ingredient for what the Rams did on their Super Bowl run. So when you start to package all of that sort of stuff up, you only could get to 8 wins max. Now,
The guys that you mentioned, all those guys you mentioned had remarkable years 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. Those guys were firing on all cylinders. You're talking about Peters and Tlaib and Zerlein and that offensive line that you mentioned, those guys. But all of those guys that you mentioned last year were either hurt like Brandon Cooks and Todd Gurley or did not perform particularly well. Guys like Marcus Peters, Aqib Tlaib was hurt too. That guys like Eric Weddle and Clay Matthews, they didn't have bad years, but they weren't standouts on that team in any meaningful way. So all these guys that are leaving were moderate pieces to begin with. So if you get the same moderate production from the guys that are replacing them, wouldn't the results probably be about the same?
But the thing is you probably are not going to get that. You got to also remember there's no offseason. First time you get a chance to touch these people will be in the summer. There's a learning curve. No matter what coaches tell you about virtual coaching up and all, it's not the same as it is on the field. You can learn some stuff. As a veteran, you're going to know the same thing, but all the newcomers, the rookies that you're depending on, you drafted Vance Jefferson to basically replace Brandon Cooks. Well,
he doesn't run nearly as well as Brandon Cooks. Okay, he's not a veteran in the NFL. It's going to be a different game for him. You took a running back to replace Todd Gurley. He's coming from the ACC, not the NFL. It's adjustments. All of those sort of things will get you to that 8-win total. It's not going to get you over the hump unless it just all of a sudden everybody is clicking and they're smart and they know what they're doing and they just. But me personally, I don't believe that that's going to be the case. Now, if they do it, then great. But going up against San Francisco twice a year, Seattle twice a year, and a Arizona team that can potentially give you a headache, that's, you know, that could be problematic.
Mike Bone, the new athletic director at USC, joins us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.